Welcome to the Church Safety and Security Broadcast with the Church Safety Guys. Brought to you by TwoWayRadioCenter.com, a Motorola value-added reseller. The Church Safety Guys is a nonprofit organization dedicated to equipping the vigilant, those men and women who stand watch, keeping our houses of worship and places of faith safe. We believe church safety and security must be a ministry first, and have engaged servant leaders who continually strive for excellence and teams of motivated volunteers that are always training. Join us for the next hour as the Church Safety Guys unpack safety, security, leadership, and ministry operations with your hosts, Dr. James McGarvey and Mike Scully. This broadcast is also available on YouTube, your favorite podcast platforms, ChurchSafetyGuys.com, and on the original Church Security app. Download it today. Feel free to like, subscribe, and share with your ministry.
Well, hello, welcome to the Church Safety and Security Broadcast with the Church Safety Guys. I am James, and once again, on this fine Sunday, joined by my co-host, Mike.
What's up, Doc?
How's it going?
I haven't done that this year yet.
You haven't. I was expecting you to say it last week, and you didn't. You skipped it. And I was like, he didn't say it. So that's what? Three broadcasts, four broadcasts.
Hey, I made it all the way through January without doing it. But you know what? One other thing I made it all the way through January without doing either is I didn't have a single drop of soda.
Interesting.
First time since I was a kid. So that was part of my New Year's resolution of getting back into kind of focus on the right things. So kind of paying attention to the right things. So soda was one of those things that had to go.
You know, I gave it up a long time ago because I started evaluating the sugar, the amount sugar products or byproducts it had. And so now I think I pretty much drink like seltzer water or like tea. I'll drink like iced tea or, you know, sweet or unsweet, but
so in
usually
other words,
unsweet.
We need a water or a tea sponsor.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
For sure. But if you know of someone, no.
Yeah. No, honestly, it's just getting a regimen together as far as looking at better decisions in 2024. That was really kind of my own personal SWOT analysis that I did of looking back at my prior year. And I was like, you know what? I do have a sweet tooth. I do enjoy those things, but I don't need to be taking it in the form of the fake sugars and high fructose and all the other stuff that's just already bad for you, but then made worse. So yeah. Kind of cutting all those things out.
I don't think I really had any New Year's resolutions. I don't typically jump into doing them because I feel like if you do them, then you're probably not going to carry them out. Most people, but
it's more vision. It's like, so you do the analysis. Yeah. Like I do, like I teach teams to do.
Makes sense.
Is I'll do the analysis of my own and kind of say, all right, it's vision casting for my own year ahead. Well, my vision cast for 2024 is I want to be a bit more intentional, be a bit more healthy, look at some of those different choices. So it's not that I'm 365 perfect in all those ways. It's certainly not. But I look at some of the areas where it's like, it's the caliber of the ingredient that is in certain things. So whether that's going organic on certain stuff, grass fed on other things, free range on the eggs, any number of things that actually help to driving a better overall health picture.
Yeah. I would say that I've tried to add in exercise and as a key component because I have gone, for some reason, I think I've entered the age in the realm where health is not on my side. And so a lot of times, like I'll be more, I would say my, if I was going to do a resolution, I would say my focus has been, to be more intentional with things, like to understand that time is valuable. And, what I'll do is, like, on my lunch break, I will go for like about a mile loop walk around our office buildings and stuff like that. And then oftentimes, if I have time, you know, I will, with my lunch, I'll take a book and I'll actually read. And I haven't done that in a long time, but I kind of feel like there's a lot of different things like that out there that this year I've tried to be more focused on, and it seems to be going, I guess it seems to be going pretty well. But
yeah.
Anyhow, if you haven't joined us for a while, welcome. Or if this is your first time and you're listening on YouTube or another platform, thanks for hanging out with us. As always, you're welcome to click the like and subscribe button wherever you are. And that helps us out with the algorithms and certainly alerts you to new content. Typically, we do content every Sunday evening. We do a live broadcast and we'll have guests on and do different things like that. The only time we take a break, typically this year it's going to be a little bit different, but typically we do a break on a federal holiday or Super Bowl Sunday, because nobody pays attention. Everybody's right. Watching. So next, I believe next week, we are going to have a special episode that we pre-recorded last week with Maddie Scholar. Maddie is the CEO and executive of the Red Letter Project and a phenomenal trainer. It was a great episode too. I'm just going to say that. Like I put a clip out there, a reel, and then I sent a clip to John Riley, and he was like, because it was on a topic him and I were talking about this last week, and he was like, oh my gosh, when is the whole thing coming out? That was awesome. In fact, I'm still kind of mentally processing some of that info, so that'll be playing next week. And then the following week will be President's Day, so we'll be off. But you definitely want to catch next week's broadcast as well, because that will bless you and definitely has some phenomenal content in it. So, but typically what we do is we do support and help churches and houses of worship. And if there's any way that we can help you in your ministry, feel free to reach out to us, and you can do that through our website, which is churchsafetyguys.com, or you can reach out to us through our app, which is the Church Security app, which is free to download, free to register, thanks to our sponsors with Motorola and Two-Way Radio Center. And we love partnering with folks, and we're thankful that they help keep the lights on around here as much as possible. So
donations, sponsors, et cetera. I mean, then the little bit of the different sales from the books, et cetera. We try to use that as best as we can to kind of be good stewards of this ministry and sow back into the community. And so James and I don't take a paycheck. This is not our primary job. We both have separate jobs out of that. If you're new to the broadcast, you've heard us say that before. But we mean it. We try to do this as a labor of love, as a calling, as serving and sowing back into the mission of every church. And within that, it's keeping the flock safe. So what we can do to help you, if we can, let us know.
Absolutely. And there are an enormous amount of resources, like I said, on our website, on the app. But if you need something and you don't see it on there, please feel free to reach out to us and we'll do the best we can to help facilitate that. So, so on this broadcast, excuse me, I wanted to bring on a gentleman that's been kind enough to help us with the conference. And I will do a quick plug for the conference. So that is actually going to be the Church Security Essentials Conference in April. That's going to be in Austin, Texas at Grace Covenant Church. And we do still have tickets available and for sale. So you are welcome to check that out. The website is churchsafetyconference.com. And if you go there, there's all sorts of different conferences, conference components that you can attend with your team. And we have stuff going on, breakout sessions on Friday, our regular conference on Saturday. And then Sunday, we've also added a firearm training component, thanks to our guest today. And so we'll bring him in so that we can introduce him and he can talk about that as well. So let me bring Carl in here. So Carl from KR Training, thank you so much for joining us today, sir.
Well, thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Welcome.
So I was checking out your website and we kind of were introduced to you all by Corey Jones, who has spoken very highly of you guys and your training in Texas. But I went on the website to do some research and saw that you have many, many, many classes that you offer. So before we get into that, I'd love if you would just kind of tell people how you kind of got into that and kind of what drives you to teach firearm classes.
Okay. Gosh, my history is long. This is my 33rd year as a trainer. So I've been teaching people since 1991. Started out as a competition shooter, and within 6 months of getting started in competition, I had the good fortune to train with world champion Chip McCormick. And within my first couple of years, I was winning local matches and going with him to world championship matches and stuff. And people started asking me to teach them how to shoot because turned out I got pretty good at it. And that led to me offering some classes for people. And then all of a sudden in Texas, we had a concealed carry permit program. And I was in the very first concealed handgun instructor course, taught a class on the very first day that it was legal to teach concealed carry classes in Texas. And I've been teaching them ever since. After that, what happened was I started exploring other training on my own, traveling to other national level trainers, Thunder Ranch and Insights Training, in particular Insights up in Seattle. And that led to hosting other trainers. And eventually 2002, we built our own permanent training facility. And we've been out there about an hour outside of Austin. I joke that we are central to all and convenient to none, because we are 1 hour from Austin, 1 hour from College Station, 2 hours from Houston, Waco, and San Antonio. So there's the majority of the population of the state of Texas within about 2 hours of us. But, you know, we're not the little indoor range down the street. What's different about us is that we have steel targets and 3D targets and a shoot house, and we let you draw from a holster, and we do simunition training, and I host national trainers, and we have classes every week, and I teach private lessons during the week, and then we do the group classes on the weekends. And over the last 30 years or so, I've built up a staff of about 14 people right now that either assist or teaches lead instructors for me. So, you know, I tell people we're the oldest, largest firearms training business in Texas at this point, because the only guy that was in it longer than me just retired and bequeathed me his student alumni list to market classes to. He blessed me as his, you know, follow-on trainer. And so that's the shortest version. Along the way, I had a day job for 20 something years doing research for the military, largely doing work with sensors that were used in security systems that were used for Navy and Air Force bases and used by Coast Guard teams, mostly for port security, but also physical security. So I spent many years dealing with the end users of security systems and people with security policies and dealing with security threats and all of that. And then I had the good fortune to switch over and do for about 9 years. I was a training manager under contract to DHS, managing a critical infrastructure protection program where I managed trainers and wrote curriculum for classes that specifically taught people how to do site security assessments. So I had a phenomenal team of, for example, retired U.S. Marshals and Special Forces people and sort of a dream team of, you know, fantastic people with tremendous resumes who brought me up to speed on what they knew. And we wrote curriculum that we taught all over the country on how to go to a site and do a site security assessment and how to do risk assessment and risk mitigation. So I've got 30 plus years of all of that stuff, plus a graduate of about 3,000 hours of formal training from about 90 different schools in terms of my formal education as a firearms trainer, and also being a USPSA grandmaster. And I've got so many credentials. It's like an 8-page list of things. I attend about 100 hours of training every year on my own to add more expertise or branch out or, you know, pick up new things or try to keep up with what the new cool kids, whatever the new hot thing says, you got to go learn. Sometimes that stuff is really good, and sometimes it's just the same old stuff in a different wrapper. But I do stay out there and stay up to date. So I keep up with the new stuff, but I also am a student of history. I actually teach a class on the history of firearms training. There's only two of us that do that in the country. It's me and Tom Givens from Rangemaster, and we're co-teaching a class on that in May at my facility. So it's a one-day course, goes through the 100 years of firearms training history and what worked and what didn't and how we got here. So, something old, something new, something borrowed, something blue, or something like that.
For sure. And I will actually, I'll post your website for KR training in the comments and everything. So if someone is in Texas or is interested in some solid firearm training, they can access that and certainly get information about you guys and all the different things that you teach. I'm looking at I have the list pulled up behind my camera here, and I'm kind of just going through it, and I'm like, wow, that class looks really cool. That class looks really cool.
Well, something we did that was radically different than what the industry does was get into running half-day classes. Sure. There's a lot of traveling trainers, and they go around, and I've been one of those people, and I've done those classes. You fly in on like a Thursday, and you cram as many classes. You try to do, either a two-day Saturday, Sunday class, or you do three different classes, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and, you try to give people as much as you can, but the cost of those courses is typically much higher. And what I found is there's a lot more local people that have 4 hours and $100 and 100 rounds of ammo that need training. And so the largest part of my customer base are regular students that'll take, three or four classes a year. They come out and get a half day class, and then they have the rest of the weekend to, go to church and do the other things that they want to do for the weekend. So we're mostly a Saturday based business at home. And you can take up to 40 hours of coursework with me and earn a challenge point if you pass all the shooting tests and the written tests and everything. And it's the same as going to like Gunsight and taking their 250 course or a 5-day class at any of the other, big schools. But you can do it over years if need be, breaking up into little pieces. And what I found is there's a whole market of people that will attend training, but they're never going to take a $500 or a $700, 2,000 round, 2-day class. They got families, they got jobs, they got church to go to, right? They got stuff they want to do, and they can't break away and they can't afford it. And so that's something that's unique, I think, to us, or something that we really promoted. And a lot of other trainers now around the country have embraced that as well, because I've been talking about it on podcasts and conferences for much a decade.
For sure. Yeah. And that was really cool when we found out that you were going to do one for churches on the Sunday afternoon of our weekend conference. Actually Mike and I were talking about it, and I commented, I said, actually that's an awesome time, because somebody could go to church and then actually head over to the range. And I noticed that quite a few of your classes are half day or that in that vein. So that's really awesome that you kind of cater more to folks that that are in that predicament.
Well, you asked me what motivates me. I want more people to be competent. And the one beef that I have with not only Texas, but pretty much every other state is that the carry permit training that the state requires, there's a huge gap between that and what well-prepared to defend yourself looks like. Mm-hmm. And I don't want higher mandatory standards because that disenfranchises people that don't have the money and the time, right? I supported constitutional carry when it passed here in Texas, because if you're a single mom that's working three jobs and you're trying to feed your kids and you don't have $100 and you don't have 4 hours and your right to self-defense shouldn't be denied you because of that. However, when you, those that have $100 and 4 hours, you know, and I know the sacrilege in Texas to say maybe you don't have to go to every football game, that you could spend $100 and 4 hours and shoot 100 rounds doing more than just sort of idly practicing with no structure and no standards and no training goals. And, you know, that's kind of our thing is, look, you can't draw from a holster at most shooting ranges. We teach how to do that. You can't shoot steel targets. You can't shoot 3D targets. You can't do a lot of the stuff that you need to do to become more competent. And so we try to provide those opportunities to people. The bad news, I mean, it's specific to the Austin area. We had a student call recently, share the news. Someone shot at his neighbor's house. He called 911 in Austin, Texas, and he was on hold 19 minutes before anyone answered. Wow. And in rural Texas, where we are, we're just an hour outside of Austin, but there's only a handful of law enforcement officers. And if there's a bad wreck on the other side of the county and I call and say, you know, somebody's in my driveway, they're not going to get there, even if they
drop. It'll take a while.
Yeah. And so, you know, between the ice storm that shut down the state, between COVID, between the drought, between the power outages and everything else, as my, one of my team members, Paul Martin, who's a preparedness trainer, says, you know, if you haven't figured out that you're on your own and you need to be able to take care of yourself beyond the minimum, I don't know what to tell you at this point. If you don't understand that you need to be prepared for medical, you need to be prepared for food, water, energy, and certainly self-defense, because if you can't stay alive, then none of the rest of that stuff matters. And so we're, you know, that's more and more my school has become more and more about that and trying to get people to the mindset that they need to be, you know, you don't call 911 and wait. You've got to be able to solve the problem. And that absolutely ties into church security because yep. Obviously, particularly with, you know, active shooter or mentally disturbed people, protesters, whatever you've got to deal with, that, you know, the problem has to be dealt with while you're waiting for the uniformed professionals to arrive. And even if it's 3 to 5 minutes, that's still too long if it's an active shooter incident. So, you know, you still need to be prepared to take care of yourself.
Yeah. And I think on top of it, you're even with around here, I'm about an hour from where you're at. I'm north of Austin. But even with that as well, so many of the departments around here are down 15-20% of their headcount as far as officers. So whether that's county or whether that's local PD in different areas, I've seen it. They're trying to recruit and they're pulling people in, but they got a lot of attrition, a lot of folks that have left, retired, etc. So you're down staff.
It's not just police. It's also EMS. Also EMS. And
everybody's taxed.
Yeah, the resources are taxed and the personnel are overworked and there's just not enough of them to go around. And so it doesn't matter how good they are or how well-meaning they are, that they're just not enough of them. And so it's essential that people do more. And certainly, you know, going back to the firearm side of things, that's our message to students is we are all about explaining to them that they need to have standards for their own capabilities beyond the state carry permit shooting tests. Because honestly, even people that get the state carry permit, they don't shoot that shooting test even once a year to verify that they can even do that.
Yeah.
And so it's you know, that's, I'm going to plug my book. I warned you I was going to do that.
It's okay.
And so I'm going to put the book up here. My co-instructor, John Dobb, and I, we wrote a book. This is not a how to shoot book. This is a why book. It's why, well, it's what do I need training in and how good do I need to be at those things? The whole middle third of the book discusses what we call minimum competency. Sure. And that's what skills do you absolutely need to be able to do, and how, you know, that's accuracy and speed and what the skills are. And even by the most, what's the word I'm looking for? Generous set of requirements. None of the state carry permit programs require anyone to draw a gun from concealment. And that is a critical skill that people need to not only practice, but learn how to do properly and learn how to have proper concealment equipment. And so that's, you know, at a minimum, that's that, being able to get the gun out of the holster quickly enough. And then in terms of accuracy, my friend Tom Givens, who runs a school called Rangemaster, Tom's trained 50,000 people over the last 50 years. And he's had 68 students involved in actual shooting incidents. Their hit ratio was 96%. That's roughly triple what your average law enforcement department is capable of doing. That's because the level of accuracy that he holds them to, the training standards are higher, right? They're more difficult. Yeah. And again, the state carry permit, you've got the giant 2 foot wide target, and anything on the paper is, you know, good for you. Tom's standards are a 6 to 8 inch circle in the center of the target, and everything outside of it is essentially considered a miss. And most people don't practice that way. They don't practice with time pressure, and they certainly don't practice with the attitude that anything outside that zone is an unacceptable hit, is the term we use for it.
It's interesting you mentioned that, because I taught CCW classes, or concealed carry weapon classes, as they call them, in Ohio for probably 15 or 16 years. And what I always thought was interesting was the truth that, you know, we would go through and we would do the state minimum, but almost at the end of every class, someone would say to me, "Oh, now I can go carry a firearm." And I'm like, well, now you can go and tell the state that you took an 8-hour class that was mostly sitting in a classroom on, you know, covering the law, whether you should go carry a firearm or not, you know, is determined by how much more training you need to be competent. Right. But, you know, oftentimes they would kind of connect that and say, "Well, the state says I'm competent." And I'm like, "Well, yeah."
Well, I would say it this way. The Constitution says that you can. I would tell you that you should.
Yeah.
But none of that guarantees success in the decision making or the firing of the gun. But honestly, you know, as people that study the armed citizens, you know, self-defense situations, the vast majority of people that get involved in armed citizen self-defense shootings, they right. don't have, many of them don't. I've worked as an expert witness in court cases in Texas, and most of the clients that I've had don't even have the carry permit, right? And they still meet acceptable decisions, or had to defend themselves in court, right, over the decisions they made. But yeah. It's still, you know, that's the whole thing, is it's this whole thing with the carry permit program is it encourages people to think that that's all they need, that it's a one and done mindset. I took the class once. That's yeah. all I ever need to do for my whole life. And that's really not the case. That we know from 100 years of firearms training what works and what doesn't. There's lots of successful programs that have cranked out people that have done well and performed well. And the reality is you need frequent. Dry firing is free, and dry firing can be done 5 to 10 minutes a day, or at least a couple of times a week, without going to the range, without spending a single dollar. Dry firing is free, and people don't do that. They don't practice drawing their gun, an empty gun. They don't practice pressing the trigger, right? And if you go to the range and you shoot 50 to 100 rounds once a month, that's going to put you in the top, you know, 5% of people that shoot handguns. That, but you have to have good quality practice. When I say practice, I don't mean take 100 rounds, set them on the bench, set up a target, and just shoot random things with no time pressure and no score and no accountability until the boxes are empty. That's not training. That's fun, but that's not training, and you're not training to a goal. And that's, you know, that's sort of the message we try to give students. We try to explain, look, you don't have to be a grandmaster. You don't have to be a distinguished, you know, bullseye expert, but you need to aspire to higher standards than the state minimum, because 100 years of study of handgun training programs, we sort of know what works and what doesn't. And the standards, you know, the standards that the big schools use, turns out those are pretty darn good. Standards that the FBI uses, really good, right? And so it's aspiring to those, I think, is a worthy goal for anyone. And, you know, and it all starts with, you have to carry the gun outside the home. The gun in the car is not going to get it done.
Right.
You can't leave it in the car. If the active shooter is happening in church, he's not going to wait for you to run to your car, fish it out of the glove box, find the magazine, load the chamber, and run back in.
Yeah. I'm kind of curious what you think. I had an opportunity, and I'll throw this question out to you, and then I'll turn it over to Mike. But I had an opportunity a few weeks ago to talk to an individual that was in church safety, and they were of the impression that they should have a different type of firearm than what they normally carry for church safety. Like in the church, when they go to church on Sundays, they should have a different type of firearm versus what they normally carry every day. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, that depends on what they carry every day. That for church security, I would want someone to have a pistol with a 4 or a 5 inch barrel. And if they don't have particularly good vision, then they probably need a red dot sight on their pistol, and they need to be capable of hitting a 6 to an 8 inch target at 25 yards. Because if they have to shoot a long distance across a sanctuary, you know, from one end of the church to the other, then they need that ability. And yes, the balsa wood 38 snub with the no sights that rides beautifully in the pocket when, you know, you're just going to the store, that's not going to be the gun. Work the problem backwards. What do I need to be able to do to Sure. address the risks that I might face? Having additional ammunition, right? Having a spare magazine, perhaps at a minimum, having more than 6 rounds in the gun. If your normal carry gun is a 22, that's probably not the right answer for church security. You know, at a minimum, it probably should be 9mm. I'm not convinced that modern thinking and the data that's out there, if they're wearing body armor, 40 and 45 is not going to make any difference over 9mm. And 9mm is going to give you more rounds in the gun and ability to shoot faster and more proficiently. And the ammo's cheaper, so you're more likely to actually practice. So, sure. You know, it's hard to, if the person was, well, you need to have a 44 Magnum or, you know, whatever. It depends on where they're coming from, right? But the little teeny tiny pocket gun that you can only grip with 3 fingers with your pinky hanging off the bottom with the nub sights and all of that, the 5-round, 7-round ultra micro compact. That's not a good choice for, it's not a good choice generally for individual self-defense. It's better than 0. As I explained to my students yesterday, if all you're willing to do is carry a 22 revolver in your pocket, 22 is better than 0. Again, going back to my buddy, Tom Givens, Tom's had 68 winners. He also said he has 3 forfeits, and that's 3 people that are dead because they didn't have a gun with them at the time they needed it. And that's a consequence people don't think about, particularly the car carry kind of people that, well, I'll just keep it in the car. Those people, you know, the car carry didn't work out for those people. And it's the same thing. They're going to outsource it, right? Even if you're just a church member and you're like, well, I don't need to carry in church because there's a church security team and they're well-trained. Well, unless you know what the training program is. Well, that may or may not be true. And what if they're the first ones that are taken out and it's on you, you know? And so I think it goes back to stop outsourcing your self-defense readiness and, you know, make it a priority, because there's probably other things that you're spending your time and your money on that are probably not as important in the grand scheme of things than that. And it doesn't mean you have to give everything up, right? Put the time in, get competent. You do a spot check a couple times a year, you go to the range. Am I good enough? Here's the standards that people recommend. Can I do these things, right? Can I dry fire every now and then? Do I verify that my skills are good? I'm not telling you have to be an expert, but you need to establish what competence is and maintain it, just like you maintain the fluids in your car. And, you know, you make sure that you've got enough food on the shelf and all those other things. It doesn't have to be a lifestyle. It doesn't have to be a lifetime commitment. I'm not telling you, you have to go to the gym every day and lift weights, right? You don't have to go to Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu class and become a black belt. The level of effort to become competent with a pistol is just a little bit more than what most people are doing. And if we just dangle the carrot just a little bit in front of them, maybe enough of them will, you know, pursue it to get a little better than they are now.
I like what you said there, Carl, with the incremental improvement. I always try to see people from a training perspective as to on a 1 to 10, where are you on the radio dial? If you're a 2, what do you got to do to get to a 3? If you're a 5, what do you got to do to get to a 6? And we always use the phrase always training, with the idea being is that we know we can always do something more. We can train more. We can shoot more. We can get better at something. We can eliminate something that was perhaps not the best of a habit. And so there's always an opportunity for improvement across everybody. And I like how you opened earlier talking about how you positioned KR and really focusing on those folks to build that slightly better, to build into themselves, to grow, but making it accessible. I mean, when we look at the demographic of the vast majority of folks who volunteer in church safety and security, is not all that's kind of your target market, really, that within that niche. Is frankly they don't always have the time, they don't always have the funds to potentially go out there, but they are serious in the sense that they know, they feel like, you know what, it's their role to stand in the gap and be that protector in their church. But the investment that sometimes churches don't make is they're great to have, hey, let's have you on a team, sure, but then they never talk training. And it's all individuals that only do training. So we really want to influence the churches and the leaders to try to say, hey, it's important that not only individually you get out there and work on yourselves, as you covered so well there, Carl, but really is how can they get out there as a team? And I think that's what is so important. And what I really like about the Sunday offering that you've put together. Why don't you tell the folks a bit more about that day and what that looks like and the details for that, so those that are listening that may be coming to the conference or considering coming to the conference, they can know more about that day.
Yeah. So the state of Texas, several years ago, our legislature passed a law and the governor signed it mandating teacher training for armed teachers in schools. These are armed people in a largely unarmed environment, protecting innocent lives against active shooters. Our state police went off and they wrote a good class, and it's a 2-day course that includes a fair amount of shooting. And what I'm offering essentially for the 4-hour session after your conference is the shooting part of the program. So it's a module that our state police called Shooting Under Duress. And it is considerably more difficult than the concealed carry shooting test, but it's the same kind of thing, except we're shooting targets that are photographs of people, and we're shooting further distances, and we're having to reload on the clock. The thing I would point out, if anybody's coming from out of town or out of state for this conference, I do have quite a few loaner guns. We have loaner holsters. If you don't know how to draw from a holster, that's not a deal killer. You can draw from have the gun sitting on a barrel and pick the gun up off a barrel, or potentially if there's time, depending on who shows up and you can get to class early, we can teach you how to draw from a holster so you can use a holster for the class. So don't feel like it's not only for experts. It's for anyone that is armed at church. Anybody with the motivation to come to the conference certainly is welcome to come to the class. And so the goal is to simply expose people to, look, these are the standards that the state of Texas has put in place for armed teacher proficiency in the classroom, right? Protecting children. And from a legal liability standpoint, I think it's wise. I train church security teams quite often. I've trained a lot of armed teachers in the last couple of years. And the thing that I tell them is, look, you need to be held to certifications, higher standards. And so when the state says this is the skills and the standards that someone protecting children in a school are held to, it seems like that if you're protecting the flock in the church, that's a good baseline. You know, where should I start? What should my standards be? I tell them you should take the armed teacher class, the whole thing, the whole 2-day course. There's a couple hundred of us statewide that are certified to teach it. We're available. Right. And that's a good, and with no disrespect to those that are out there offering, you know, Joe Bob's church security program. There's a lot of those that are really good. But if you end up, again, speaking from the courtroom side, someone says, you know, something goes wrong and one of the people on the team does something, misses a shot, does something bad, whatever, and the church is held liable. And it comes down to what standards were your people held to and what did they train to and what were they trained in? Well, the seminar traveling trainer, that's great, but where are they certified in? What's their background versus what, if you have a program in place designed by your state, why would you not take advantage of that? And then you can always do all the other things beyond it, but at least meet that state minimum that's unique to your situation. And so that's why I'm offering the shooting part of the course, so people can see what we're doing in Texas, what our state has done as a formalized program. And if they've never been exposed to that kind of training, then this will be really good for them.
Yeah, I'm sure there's so many that could benefit, myself included. I think it's every opportunity to get a chance to have more realistic training is always a good thing. And I think that's that's what's hard to come by. You mentioned earlier, off air, there's not a whole ton of ranges and certainly not a lot of places that you could draw from the holster and have movement or other things too. So to really get that practice and other sort of muscle memory assembled versus just hitting a piece of paper, as you said earlier. So it sounds like a really great course that a lot of folks, certainly in the church security space, would absolutely benefit from.
The other thing that we do that's unique in the state of Texas, and often what I get called on to travel to do, is we're also certified to use ammunition and airsoft guns to do what they call force on force training, which is structured scenarios where you have live opponent role players. I train other people how to run that kind of training. And then I run that kind of training myself. Mostly the scenarios that we run in our classes are armed citizen oriented, right? And so that's working within one individual with a friend or whatever. It's rarely, you know, full team, but there that sort of training could be done. Once you get, if you had a team that met reasonable shooting standards, then, you know, doing a live action role play scenario with airsoft or simunition, that sort of thing. You can't just go run that stuff on your own. Again, that requires special insurance and special certification to be able to do it and have your legal ducks in a row.
For sure. Yeah. For sure. What would be, we're almost out of time, but what would be some recommendations for firearm, using firearm guidelines, I'll say that, for church safety teams? You mentioned that you do train, you and your instructors train quite a few folks with churches, or train churches and houses of worship. What are some of the trends that you're seeing, and what are some of your recommendations for maybe a church safety team that's out there that's trying to put a team together and go through those steps of adding firearms or a firearm component?
Well, whether the state is constitutional carry or not, I would require that everybody on the team have a state carry permit because they need to know the laws.
Sure.
I would suggest that they find out what the qualification course of fire for the police department or the sheriff's department or both that their church is in, and they should train until they can pass that. They need to be able to shoot as good as the cops or the deputies that are coming, again, because that's not a particularly high bar in the realm of, for example, when I run the armed teacher class, I have them shoot a law enforcement qualification course of fire. And I don't believe I've ever had any of my armed teacher students fail it. Hmm. And so, being able to shoot past the law enforcement qual for your jurisdiction, I think would be a perfectly good next step in terms of goals.
Sure. Right?
And then beyond that, it wouldn't be firearms. It would be medical. It would be beyond stop the bleed. I would say, for example, my friend Caleb Causey with Lone Star Medics does both online and in-person training. And there's another school called Dark Angel Medical. And to get a full day of essentially trauma medicine to what do we do when we've got 18 people that are shot and there's two ambulances coming and how do we handle that? Because I think mm-hmm. that's underserved. It's not sexy, right? Going to the range and shoot guns is kind of cool and yep. Doing all the John Wick stuff. But you've got to be prepared for the medical stuff. And I think anybody that is carrying a firearm needs to have that some gunshot wound treatment background more than just the free, stop the bleed class. They need a hands-on course. And so that's where I would go. That's what I tell people to do. I have a couple of guys on my team that are stop the bleed instructors, but we also have Caleb is right down the road in Dallas, and I bring him in a couple of times a year. In May, we're bringing him to my facility for a one-day dynamic first aid course, which would be perfect. It's a Saturday class, and it'd be perfect for any of the Central Texas people that are coming to the conference that want to do more. What's the next thing? Well, the next thing after my class in April would be come take Caleb's medical class. We scheduled it on purpose, by the way, to make that convenient for the conference attendees.
Awesome.
It's great.
It's definitely, it's interesting sometimes in the church safety realm, seeing where people's thoughts are and priorities. It was funny. Actually, Friday, I was with one of the local churches in Central Ohio, and they were kind of stuck on the idea of putting together some firearm training certification or methods, framework for their team. And we were sitting at a table, and I commented and I said, do you guys have an actual policy, like from your church, endorsed by your church leaders, to say, this is how we handle emergencies and emergency situations? And they both looked at me and they're like, no, we don't have anything like that. And I said, well, how about if we work on kind of some of that stuff, like working through setting up a framework for your team and policies and procedures, and then we can talk about firearm stuff. And so we did actually get to the point of talking about firearms. And I actually had printed off a few copies of the Ohio Police Officer Training Academy's requirement. So basically what OPATA tells all of Ohio law enforcement. And I kind of walked them through some of those guidelines and said, this is a great place to start. But again, once everybody gets to that level, my encouragement to them was, what are you doing to push people beyond that for the added stress and for the added components of, the different dynamics of a Sunday morning at,
I mean, but you've got to start somewhere. And the reality sure. that I've encountered with the church teams that I've worked with is you get let's just make a number. Let's say 20 people that have carrier permits that are already carrying a church. And they're like, well, yeah, I could be on the church security team. And then when you raise the bar to say, well, you've got to actually be able to draw from a holster properly and safely, and you've got to be able to pass the, you know, local law enforcement qual course. Well, half of them decide that they're not interested in being on the team at that point. And then maybe you get six that were willing to put in the work to get to that next level. And so again, you know, draw different baselines and figure out what you've got, right? Because there's a thing called the Dunning-Kruger principle. I'm not sure if you're aware of that or have heard of it. We referenced it in our book, and it's that everyone thinks they're above average. You were talking about earlier, right? Where are you on the dial? Well, your average person that carries the 22, you know, five-shot revolver in their pocket will tell you that they are John Wick, and that they can make the, you know, from the hip, they can make the 50-yard headshot with their revolver. And you ask them, you know, when's the last time you went to the range? Well, a couple of years ago, right? And when's the last class you took? Well, when I took my state carry permit class. But they firmly believe that they've got that capability. And the key is it's easy to maintain that perception if you never put your conceptions to the tests, right? And so it does take some special people that are willing to be tested and then work to overcome deficiencies and, you know, expose problems. And absolutely, scenario type training, we confront that all the time, that there's a certain percentage of my students that will not come to the live action scenario training because there's a much higher probability they're going to make a mistake.
Sure.
Right. They make mistakes and they learn from it. And the idea is then, you know, God forbid they get into a situation, it's not the first time they've seen something that looks like, at least on the simulation level, looks like reality.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to give the most important speech of your life to the UN, you'd probably practice it before you got up on the lectern to give the talk, right? But the consequences of some of this other stuff is bigger, and people don't think, well, I probably need to do some rehearsal before that really happens. It's just the way our minds work. And it falls into the that's hard basket, as we used to call it. And that just gets filed away somewhere. And well, look, the game is right?
It's funny to me because, you know, we went through that. My church safety team went through that a bit. And we took everybody out and we were doing some training exercises and that sort of thing. And I had intentionally, before I went out, I had intentionally measured different distances, like in our church, in the sanctuary. Yeah. And I brought those out and I set up the targets, and, you know, people went out and they're like, you want me to shoot what? You want me to shoot, you know, some of the folks were like, you want me to shoot that? And I said, well, first of all, we're all going to shoot it. We're going to see how we all are, including myself. And then we'll make adjustments to train and do better. And after we started getting into the rhythm of doing it, everybody saw where they were, and I stopped the firing and everything. And I said, now, why do you guys think I picked this distance? And they were like, no idea. And I said, because that's the distance from the back of the sanctuary to the stage. And if you ever have to make that shot, now, you know, in real life time outside of the church, what, you know, what that distance is, and if you can make that shot or not, or if you should even try.
Yeah. I know that I shocked one church that brought me in as a security consultant. I'm not sure they were ready for my answer on one of those issues, where this was based on another church that was doing it and they were well prepared, and they came in. There's a little church in Bertram, Texas, that probably the most prepared church I ever worked with. They brought me in and they had so many things already figured out. I was really impressed, and they were great fun to train. One of the things that they did that I recommended to this larger 3,000 member church was the husband and wife that regularly ran the soundboard at the back of the hall. They would always bring a rifle with a red dot sight, and it would be underneath the mixing desk. And their reason they did that was exactly what you said. They said, it's 65 yards from this to where the pastor stands. And if someone needs to take the shot, look, here's this big rail for the enclosed area right in front of the soundboard. We get the rifle, you set it on the rail, 65 yard shot is nothing, right? Handgun from somebody standing up in the pew in the back row, much more hard, you know, much more difficult, sure. Lower probability of success. And I kind of said the same thing. It's like, well, the second balcony where the sound guy is, they've got this nice enclosed thing and it's got a nice rail. And it's like, it's 150 yards from the back of the second balcony where the soundboard is to where you need to make a shot. I said, you know, maybe you need to find some former military sniper guy that's in your, or some really avid long range shooter or deer hunter or someone that shoots rifle really well and train them to be the assistant sound guy. Right. That, I mean, that's exactly, you know, you think the way I do. It's like, we got to figure out what the train for the equipment and the situation. And it's like, yeah, if you're in the choir and you're on the stage, well, yeah, your pistol, and if you could shoot 10 yards, that's great. But if the right answer is that you need to be the guy at the soundboard needs to be the one doing the shooting, well, that's, you need the right equipment and you need the right person there to do it. And, you know, luckily they have a large, you know, 3,000 person congregation. And so that gives them more to choose from, let's say. But like I said, this little 100 member church in Bertram, you know, I gave them a gold star because I was really impressed at the amount of consideration that they had put into things and how well they were already ahead of the curve, way ahead compared to others. So, you know, you don't have to be a 3,000 member megachurch to get it right. You know, it was like,
it's always always a balance. I mean, I think you're looking at, James, you talk about going out and tracking the distance, but sometimes now take it the other direction, figure out where your training is and then understand what your staffing positions might be better suited for on the basis of what your team is competent to do. Don't put them 25 yards out if your team isn't competent to do 25 yards. Staff the positions accordingly. Place spots that are based on the competency of your team to increase the likelihood that you don't have an accident.
Well, you need communicators. You need medical people. You just need eyeballs, right? You just need people that are good at paying attention that can get on the radio and go, look at person in, you know, row 7 in the green jacket, keep an eye on them because they look like they may be a problem. Yep. And so that's, you know, there's all kinds of stuff. We don't have time today to get into all of that, but yeah, there's a whole world beyond the firearm side of it that I've worked with churches on, you know, learning how to greet people and sort of be their buddy. And if you can do that in a positive way to help them feel welcome at the same time. If you're not sure about, you know, hey, that heavy satchel, that heavy duffel bag full of, I don't know what you've got. How about we store that in the coat room during the service? Right?
Hey, when did you join the worship team? You don't need that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's like, is that a guitar? That's awfully heavy for a guitar. You know, what's in the case? Can we set it in here where we can take care of it for you? You know, there's all kinds of little things like that. I've got one church that they're literally across the street from where the homeless are in their area. And it's not the active shooter they're worried about. It's just random people. And they want to be welcoming to those people. But at the same time, they don't want those people to like steal all the computers and the televisions and the music equipment and pass out in the hallway and use drugs in the restrooms and all that. So it's not always the active shooter, and there's a whole world beyond that. But mostly what I do is the gun stuff.
For sure. Well, I definitely shared your website. So if you're listening at home or at another time, you're welcome to check out Carl's website. He has some phenomenal training that he's offering, and a top-notch set of instructors that you kind of connect to pretty much everybody that I can think of with instructors that teach with you or help you teach. So
we have many tentacles. I have
you do
many people on staff with, I have martial arts people. I have, you know, Purple Heart vets that are retired from being blown up in Iraq. I've got medical people. I've got a paramedic instructor. You know, we're not quite the Avengers, but I have a lot of diversity in age and experience and subject matter expertise that we've managed to acquire along the way. And they come out and help teach classes, and different people teach, you know, different things that they're expert in, and that makes me stronger. So that's kind of how we've evolved over time, how we've survived as an institution.
For sure. Well, again, thanks for hanging out with us on this broadcast, Carl. And we're, Mike and I are definitely looking forward to meeting you in person in Austin, and we appreciate your partnership with us to make the conference happen. We're looking forward to it.
Well, thank you for working on this topic. You know, it's important, and people need to care about it, and they need to be active in it. So, you know, God bless you for doing this and getting the word out and providing opportunities for people.
Thanks, Carl.
Thanks. All right. So we'll wrap up things here real quick. But again, if you just joined us, thanks for hanging out with us. Please click the like and subscribe button, and you can see future podcasts or future broadcasts that come out and catch content from us accordingly. Feel free to like, subscribe, and share it with your team so that your team can benefit from the information as well. As always, you can reach out to us through our website, which is churchsafetyguys.com. Or you can reach out to us through the Church Security app, which is free to download on Google or iOS platforms. And just one last plug, we do still have tickets available for the Church Security Essentials in April, which is in Austin, Texas this year. Visit churchsafetyconference.com, and you can definitely pick up your tickets to attend that event. We've got some fantastic speakers there this year. Really looking forward to it. It's going to be a good weekend. We added a few days too. So basically on request from you all to add more to it. So we did that, and thanks to folks like KR Training and a few others, we've been able to do that at a very reasonable rate. So check it out. So until next time, take care. God bless. Have a great week. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you for joining the Church Safety Guys broadcast, brought to you by Vigilant Impact. We hope that you found it informative, and we appreciate your feedback and interaction. Be sure to share our broadcast with your teams, join the discussion online, and connect with us on social media or at our website at churchsafetyguys.com. For other great ministry resources, download the Church Security app. Remember, keep a servant's heart, a mindset of ministry, and semper disciplina. Always be training. Have a blessed week.